Hi, this is Wayne Randazzo of the WCBS Mets Radio Network, and you're listening to Baseball and BBQ.
This is Doug Scheiding of Rogue Cookers, baseball fan and barbecue world champion. You are listening to the Baseball and Barbecue Show with Len and Jeff. Let's play ball.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number 161 of Baseball and BBQ, where the BBQ stands for
Barbecue.
I'm Jeff Cohen, the man ranter, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. Welcome back to Baseball and BBQ. Leonard.
It's great to be back. I'm just coming off of my my trip to Fan High.
Okay.
Too much turkey.
Too much turkey.
Too much. Can you believe it? Can you ever have too much turkey?
I guess you can, but you're going to eat that for days.
Days, yes. Jeff, are you more of a, when you go up, do you take like one piece of turkey and then kind of everything else, the stuffing, the cranberry, the, you know, the sweet potato, the mashed potatoes, the all the sides? Or do you take a little more turkey? What is your Thanksgiving plate look like?
It looks like some turkey here, some stuffing here, some cranberry sauce there, some potatoes there, some beans with almonds here. You know, whatever my mom makes, it's good.
All right. Well, I want to get back to that in a second. Also tell you who our guests are, because we have a, should we call it a Thanksgiving special?
Sure.
Now that for everybody that's hopefully done some of their holiday shopping the day after Thanksgiving.
Sure.
We'll tell you who we have as a guest, as our gift to you for this Thanksgiving. But first, let me just tell you guys, basketball is back. That's right. And BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You will always find the latest odds, team matchup information, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. It's always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag. That's betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. Bet online, where the game starts. Jeff, before we get back to our Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving talk, let's just tell everyone that we have on Brett Mandel from the baseballbbq.com website, where anyone who listens to this show knows we love, absolutely love their products. And this is perfect timing because holiday shopping is here. And if you don't go to baseballbbq.com for that baseball loving, grill loving person in your life, you are crazy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then, of course, we have a Brian Lopinto.
Lopinto.
I don't know why I say it like Lopinto, but Brian is back with us after a long absence, too long, as I like to say, to talk about Hinchcliffe Stadium, which is almost complete and is going to be a beautiful restored Stadium in Paterson, New Jersey, where the New Jersey or Jersey, what?
New the Jersey Jackals. Jackals. Yeah. Of the Frontier League.
Exactly. They're going to be playing their home games there. It's going to be an exciting place. Part of the parks yeah. department. And we talk about it all. So before we get to any of that, before we get to Brett, before we get to Brian, Jeff, you had a nice Thanksgiving.
I did. You?
Very nice. I gained a lot of weight. I mean, because I'm still eating.
Yeah.
I haven't stopped. I just keep going back for more.
Yeah.
It's already 2 days after Thanksgiving and I can't stop. And Jeff, what's your dessert of choice?
Apple pie.
Do you like a little ice cream on that? You like your pie a la mode?
Sure. A la mode, yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
And any pumpkin pie to go with that?
No, I'm not a pumpkin pie guy.
No?
No.
See, I'm not really a pie guy at all.
No.
I mean, the only pie I really like is like a chocolate pie. There's plenty of desserts that I'll eat. So, and by the time I get done eating the regular meal, I don't even have room for dessert. You know, all you want to do is just undo the button on your pants.
Yep.
You know, sit in front of the couch, in front of the TV, and just enjoy some football. And just, it's what a day. It is a food coma day.
I know, right?
But now that, you know, Black Friday's over, and hopefully everybody's got themselves some nice bargains.
Yep.
And now you can just enjoy, sit back, relax, enjoy as we bring you Brett Mandel of BaseballBBQ.com.
Baseball and Barbecue. We are proud and happy to have back with us Brett Mandel of BaseballBBQ.com, makers of such great products of a wood cutting board that and tools made out of bat handles, forks, spatulas, scrapers now, tongs. So, Brett, welcome back to Baseball and BBQ.
Welcome back, Brett.
It is always terrific to be with you guys.
So, Brett, you know, we met a couple of years ago, and you had a small company. We just had a couple of products, and I'm looking at your website now, and wow. I mean, talk about explosion. Wow, look at all these products. So, congratulations, and how's the growth of the company going?
It's been going terrific. We've been able to do a lot of different things with our products. As you mentioned, we have our patented bat handle barbecue tools and our cutting boards. We've been able to do licensing with Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, the Players Association. And so we've been able to do some fun things with our tools. So we just had our World Series champion crowned, of course, heartbreak for my Phillies, but we were able to do commemorative plates for the pennant winner and for the world champions. And we're also going to do for the division winners as well, that have the Major League logos and also the Players Association names, the signatures. So that's really cool. We've been expanding our college collection with new colleges for Christmas and for next year. So that's a lot of fun. We've had a lot of requests. And really, as I always tell you guys, you know, it's the community of folks who like our stuff have a lot of input. So when you guys said, hey, you know, this is the way you should make a tongs instead of like this, we listen. And when people said, can you do tools and plates in Spanish? Like, yeah, we can. So now you can get Los Cardinales and Los Mets and Los Phillies.
Yeah. And, you know, as Len always mentions, when we plug your product, your website, Len always says, talk about Baseball BBQ. And it's true. It's the only tools I use on my barbecue. I love it.
Love it. Love it. Love it. No, we're super proud. Obviously, we wanted to make quality products and they're great. It's always nerve-wracking when people come and like really, really flex the tools and whack them against things, but they hold up. They're really well made.
Yeah, they're excellent. And it's true what Jeff said. I'm looking at your website and it's what a difference 2 years makes. And obviously we've had you on a number of times, but I was looking, I think the first time we had you on was in July of 2020 was the first
time. Sounds
about
right. Yeah. So we launched like a month before that.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's at baseballbbq.com for everyone. You got to look. I'm looking at some of the who you've worked with. You've got Major League Baseball. You've got Dell, Topps. Now, of course, Tops is you know, for anyone who is I know Jeff at my age, of course, Tops is the that was the baseball card. There was no other. There was no Don Russ or Fleer or anything. It was Tops. So what have you done with Tops?
We did some gifting for them. They did some custom gifts for, can't remember if it was employees or people that they had relationships with, but they were a lot of fun to work with. Now, when you guys had baseball cards, did you put them in your spokes? Did you flip them? What did you do with your baseball cards?
All the above. Yeah. Yes.
I did not put them in the spokes. That I didn't do, but I would scale them and I could really throw a card for distance. And yep. Then we would, of course, scale them against a wall. I remember at the elementary school, the wall had the windows and a little shelf. And, you know, if you got it to stay up there and there were leaners and, you know, all this, you made the rules. And then, of course, yeah, flipping them was another thing. Yeah, I love doing that with the baseball card. Sure.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody under the age of, I don't know, what, 40, 30 knows what flipping baseball cards is. And you know, if they're not graded 10 out of 10 and not in some, glass case, I'm not sure that the kids know what that means these days.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So what's your partnership with Baseballism? Because I know when I go to, that's one of my favorite baseball stores to go to when I'm actually out in Arizona. I always go there. What's your relationship with them?
So we did something great with them out at the Field of Dreams movie site where, as you may know, the Baseballism has the store at the Field of Dreams movie site. And so we did some products out there. If you build it, they will come engraved on our tools, and they sold like crazy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be out at the Field of Dreams movie site this year. We were there last year and got a chance to, you know, go watch the game. We saw the minor league game. There's a little festival in Dyersville. And we sold some of our stuff, a lot of the logo stuff for the Cubs and the Reds. And then they also had an autograph session with some Reds and Cubs legends. And so we did a couple of things where we had Fergie Jenkins and Dave Concepcion and George Foster signed some plates for us. And then we gave those plates to our charitable partner, Pitch In for Baseball and Softball, which raises money and collects gloves and other equipment and gives them to people in this country and other countries that can't necessarily afford it. And so they were using them to auction those things off and raise some money for the charity. So it was really good. You know, it was a really nice product. And man, Fergie Jenkins is just an awesome guy. And George Foster, you know, he looks mean, but he's a sweetheart.
Pitch In for Baseball, just let you know that was my son's bar mitzvah project. So we collected a lot
That's
of
fantastic.
Stuff.
Fantastic.
And I drove it into Pennsylvania and dropped it off at their warehouse. So
yeah, in fact, I have to go to their warehouse next week and drop off those home plates. They did it as a playoff auction, and I have to bring some old baseballs and some other stuff up there as long as I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pitch In for Baseball and Softball. What a wonderful charity.
Yep. PIFBS.org. And anybody who checks out at baseballbbq.com has the option to make a charitable donation, and we match that charitable donation. So we're raising a couple dollars for them, and it is a great project. Kudos to your son.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And what about Ripken Baseball? I see that also as who you've worked with.
Yeah, the Ripken folks have been really cool. We've done some things for Aberdeen and where's their place in Tennessee? Pigeon Forge is their other place. So if you go down there and play baseball, you know, you can go get a Pigeon Forge Ripken experience, home plate or tools. We've been trying to do some other things with them that hopefully will come to fruition. But they were an early adopter of someone who was a big fan of us. We met them out at the Las Vegas Sports Licensing and Tailgate Show. Turned out the guy from Ripken was a Philly guy, which of course I love. So we talked a little Philly stuff, and then we said, "Hey, what can we do together?"
When you started 2 years ago, obviously you were just beginning. Now, is this your full time gig now?
It's more and more full time for me. It's definitely full time for my partner Mike, who you've met. I've been doing more and more. You know, now we have a small crew of salespeople to manage. We have lots of deals that have to be put together. The beautiful thing about the tools, of course, you know, we engrave them, so they're endlessly customizable. If you wanted to put Jeff's Grill, Len's Grill, if you want to put Baseball and BBQ Podcast, you can do that. You can put your own logo. But now that we have so many of the licensing, the major league licensing, the college licensing, there are lots and lots of fun demand of folks who want to do some stuff with our tools and give them as gifts. We had a terrific summer where we gave gifts to the Cape Cod League teams. A lot of the Cape Cod League teams used our cutting boards as gifts for their host families. So that was great fun to do. And it's always a great excuse to go up and see Cape Cod baseball and go up there and hang with them. So, you know, people are really enjoying the tools, really enjoying the boards, having a lot of fun doing different things with them. And it's keeping me more and more busy.
And speaking of gifts, you know, holiday season is right around the corner. You're gearing up, getting ready for many, many orders.
Absolutely. In fact, if you want to make sure that Santa can tuck your baseball BBQ stuff into his sleigh, you probably want to get the order in before the end of the first week or second week in December. I know we've been hearing already from retailers that that shipping is going to be tight this Christmas. So shop early. We'll make plenty of more things for you.
Yeah, we're actually recording this a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving. And what's amazing is before we came on, I was watching some TV and I saw there was a commercial for the Hess truck toy, the Christmas toy, right? And there was, I think it was a Macy's commercial that also was all about early Black Friday deals and showed there were Christmas trees on it and stuff. It's 2 weeks before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And it's already, you know, the holiday season is, at least for shopping, has begun.
Well, for me, you know, this was a tremendous baseball season. Of course, it was great fun to watch the playoff run. I'm a Phillies fan and lived and died with them. You know, it feels like just the end of summer because for me, baseball season ended whatever it was last week, and now suddenly it's hot stove time and it's free agency. In my mind, you know, it's still late September.
Sure. Yeah. Now, not just your cutting boards and your tools, but you really increased your store here. You have lots more clothing and hats, lots of swag.
Yeah, you know, we first put up the swag, and I see you're wearing a hat. I'm wearing the tournament hat that we wear for our old guy baseball team. When we first put up the clothing, it was basically a placeholder. Like we didn't have that many things. We had our fork and our spatula, and we said, well, you know, all right, maybe we could do some cutting boards. Maybe we could have some hats or shirts if people want them. People buy this stuff, and they really like it. You know, we've had a sighting in the wild where one of us saw somebody else wearing one of our things that was amazing to see. You know, not too many guys walking down the street in Philadelphia wearing a I Turn Grills On baseball BBQ shirt or a Philly tournament hat. Just today, someone bought something for the Seattle Mariners and bought one of our tournament style hats, which, you know, there are, I don't know, dozens of these in the world, most of them owned by the guys on our team who play in these tournaments. And, you know, a handful of other folks who think, yeah, that's a pretty cool hat. I did a podcast with this guy who's the Dad Hat Chronicles, who, you know, you guys came to us because your baseball BBQ. He came to us because he really liked our hat and
thought it was an
awesome hat. And then all of a sudden we started talking about the baseball and the BBQ, and, you know, we did a lot of fun things with him. But yeah, it's great. You know, our stuff, we try to make everything as high quality as possible because, you know, God knows we wear it, we use it, people count on it. It's definitely not disposable stuff. It's not stuff that you're going to just wear for a season. These hats, these shirts, hopefully folks will have them for a lifetime.
Oh, definitely. And I've given them as gifts and people just love them. And I can't say, you know, so much about it. It's just terrific. And you also hooked it up with Big Rube and Big Diamond Rube. Dirt Rub. Right. And you sell that as well.
I loved your podcast with Big Rube. I could sit and talk stories with Big Rube. Rube knows everybody. He's connected to everybody. He sent me a picture the other day. My phone beeps. I look at it. He's hanging out with Brandon Graham of the Philadelphia Eagles and, you know, showing a picture of him with the rub. So Big Rube, as you told his story, he told his story with you. He was the guy who brought the Mitchell and Ness to the fashion world. Mm-hmm. So it used to be, you know, old white guys like you and me walking around with a Mickey Mantle jersey and thinking like, oh, this is really cool. This is Mickey Mantle. And he was the guy that got, you know, P. Diddy and Beyonce and whatever to wear the Don Money jersey or the Dave Cash jersey. And, you know, suddenly Mitchell and Ness has become, you know, a gazillion-dollar enterprise. Well, Rube did that. but his passion is food. And, you know, you guys come down to Philadelphia, I'll take you over to Rube's place and cook you up a terrific cheesesteak. He does great stuff. He did that tremendous barbecue rub for us. We're in the middle of developing a sauce that hopefully will be opening day next baseball season, the high heat hot sauce. We're really having a lot of fun with it. Rube loves it. He's able to, you know, spread his word far and wide. And, you know, yeah, people come and it's always amazing. You know, yes, people come and get the tools and they get our silly shirts and whatever. I'm amazed at the people who will come to our site and I'll look at the order and I will say, you know, two bottles of rub. Like, okay, you know, that's great. You know?
Yeah. When he described the way he makes a Philly cheesesteak,
yep,
it was like none other. And I just, you just, if you go back and listen to that episode, whatever it was, he describes how he melts the, you know, the cheese and he sautés those onions, but for so long. They're not just grilled onions. They are melting your, I mean, just unbelievable. Yeah. And just a great, great guy. The stories that he told are just phenomenal. And the rub is terrific. So, I mean.
what do you put it on? Do you have a go-to that you use it with?
I've put it on chicken. I mean, that's a big thing for me. I like to put things on chicken thighs. You know, I put on chicken thighs and just, I like to get the skin crisp as anything. That's my thing.
Rube does a thing with short ribs and the rub. It's just amazing. It's, you know, melt in your mouth. You never want to stop eating it. It's a good thing that he doesn't do it for us every night because I would blow up. I just can't stop eating it. It's fantastic.
So let's talk a little bit about you. You've mentioned Philadelphia a few times, and we know how proud you are of your city. Jeff and I had a great experience years ago with this podcast when we went to Citizens Bank Park. And
I love those stories.
You know, with Bulls, with, you know, of course, with Greg Luzinski. And you know, we've told that many times. So I happen to root for the Phillies as well.
Atta guy.
Yeah, which, as I know, Jeff's nodding.
Just making faces. I see.
You know, I listen.
I can't.
Well, you know what? In this case, so I want you root for Dusty Baker. You root for the Phillies because they were so nice to us. But obviously, you know, Brett, we know where your loyalty was, of course. So when Girardi gets fired, pretty early in the season. If I said to you, they're now going to be in the World Series, you would have put me in you would have locked me up, put me in a straitjacket, right? That's
absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and through the whole season, of course, this was such a flawed team. They strike out too much. Their defense is shaky. Their bullpen was lousy and then it got better. But the ride that they took us on was just amazing. And you know, I remember back to the 1993 Phillies, the Macho Row, Lenny Dykstra, Darren Dalton Phillies. That was a similar, I wouldn't call this necessarily lightning in a bottle because the team was supposed to be good. And obviously there's talent on that roster, but they underperformed and then they got rid of Girardi. But, you know, I think this team will go down as didn't get us a championship, but never need to buy a beer in this town ever again, because the ride was so much fun. And I can remember being at the 1993 games and, oh my God, what a party that was. And beating the Braves in the NLCS was amazing. And until Mitch Williams gave up the Joe Carter, you know, touch them all, Joe home run.
Yeah, right.
That was an amazing run. And yeah, similarly with this team, this year, my son is now 16. I got to go to the World Series game, the first game in Philadelphia, the one that the Phillies won with my son, which, you know, what a phenomenal night that was. And I'm sure that's a night that he'll never forget. World Series don't happen in Philadelphia every year. There's only been six of them in my lifetime, and, you know, cherish them. And I was thinking, I was at the last Phillies win in 2009 against the Yankees before they lost that game, that series in six. And then I went to the first game. So I'm on a World Series winning streak. The Phillies need to get me tickets and put me in the seats every night.
Yeah. Well, I'm just hoping to get the next one at Citi Field. I mean, I know it was there in 2015, but they didn't win. So they won one game that year. So And no, Syndergaard won that game, and he's on your team now.
We'll see if they bring him back. I don't need to tell you guys any more in baseball. You know, in sports, there isn't dynasties that are built over years and years and last. The Phillies had a nice little run in that 2008 through 2011. Or mm-hmm. 7 through 11, I guess, but they only won one World Series. Don't take it for granted. You know, the Phillies may never make it back in my lifetime. You know, when my son asked me, he saw what we were paying for the tickets for the World Series game. And he said, "You're willing to pay that for a game?" I said, "How many World Series have you ever been to?" It might be never. You know, but I have somewhere behind me over there, I have a set of 1964 World Series tickets, which was the year the Phillies didn't make it to the World Series. The year it snowed blue snow and they went on the 10-game losing streak when they were up 6.5 with 12 to play. Don't take it for granted in Philadelphia. No, it'll never happen.
Absolutely not. Actually, I have a blow-up of the 1969 World Series ticket on my wall there. $15.
Atta guy. We didn't pay $15. I think we paid $15 for the beers that night at the World Series.
I'm sure. And parking must have been a mint because we know two of our friends, two of our podcast buddies, they went down to Atlanta last year and parking was $150 there.
Wow. We're Center City folks. So we just hopped on the subway and went down, which was nice.
Yeah.
Jam packed full of Phillies fans, deliriously happy.
Yeah.
So Bryce Harper, do you have a shrine to him in your house?
You know what? I'm a horrible Phillies fan because, like, when Pete Rose came to the Phillies when I was a kid, I always sort of thought of him as a traitor because he wasn't really a Philly. Bryce, I look at as I still give him the side eye that he's really not one of us, that Rhys Hoskins is the true Philly. But certainly Bryce put on a show, and I think he gets us. He really does appreciate the Philadelphia spirit and the, like, all we want you to do is want it as much as we do and try as hard as we would if we had the talent. And he gets that. And he's one of the guys that will yell at the other players in the locker room who get mad when the Phillies fans boo. Like, look, all they want you to do is give the effort. And you know, we don't care if you strike out. We care if you don't care that you struck out. If you look as angry as we do that you struck out, we're okay with that. If you walk away saying, big deal, I struck out, we can't take that.
Right.
Well, you have him for, what, another 50 years? What, he signed a 50-year contract?
And relatively cheap at this point. Like, the salaries that they're talking about for, we're looking at Trey Turner. Everyone's excited to get Trey Turner. He's going to get, a billion-dollar contract for 100 years. That's incredible.
Yeah.
When he signed, there was a little bit, we had a debate about whether he was worth that kind of money because, yes, he had won an MVP, but he kind of wasn't, I guess he was constantly being compared with Trout, I guess, as far as, in each league, who was the best. And right, Jeff would, not that there was a comparison, but I'm just saying, and when he signed that big deal, I thought, wow, that 13 years, that's with he did not take an opt-out clause. I mean, he really committed.
Yeah.
That's a long contract.
Absolutely. And I think, if the Phillies go on a run, if they have a number of years where they're in the mix and have a shot to win it, I think it's the signing of Bryce Harper that changed all of that because, suddenly this was a destination that other people could look at and say, the Phillies are building, they're doing something here. Last year, at the beginning of the year, they finally went over the luxury tax and spent real money. This ownership is willing to go for it. And like, look, it's not my money. I don't know that I would pay this much money for Bryce Harper or anybody else, but I'm thrilled that Middleton's putting on the field.
Yeah. So I just went back to you, going back to your website here. I'm looking at your cutting boards, and you have two kinds. You have the home plate kind and then the kind of like a jersey type of with the team name or the player's name. So that's kind of unique, the one that looks like a jersey.
Well, as I said to you before, when we first put cutting boards on the website, it was really just to have more stuff. We thought, maybe someone likes it. And we put up the cutting board in the shape of the home plate, and people really liked it. And I don't think it was you guys that suggested it. I think it was somebody else who in the barbecue community who said, you need to make a bigger home plate. So we make the 12-inch home plate, which is sort of our standard one. Then we make a 17-inch home plate, which is the regulation size. We always joke that we need to make a 24-inch home plate and call it the Angel Hernandez home plate. That just looks bigger. But then folks said you need to put a juice trough in your 17-inch plates. Now we have a plate with a juice trough.
Okay.
And then one of the guys on our old guy World Series team said it would be cool if you made a jersey shaped cutting board. Okay, so now we make a jersey shaped cutting board and people are going nuts with this. So people are putting the Phillies on the front and Harper on the back, or Mets on the front and Cohen on the back. Really having a lot of fun doing that. We're doing something with the Tampa Rays that they're doing something for. I can't remember if they're suite buyers or season ticket holders or something like that. But they're getting Rays on the jersey and then the names on the back. So it's a super premium gift they're giving out, and people really really enjoy it.
Yeah,
they're unique. Every time, Jeff said we promote on our show every episode. They are unique, and you know what? They're not going to break the bank. That's the other thing. They make great gifts. They're unique, and you can get them for someone, specialize it with the engraving, and you're not going to break the bank.
Sure. If somebody wants a tool or a board, it's relatively inexpensive. Or, of course, if you want to have the top-to-bottom MVP set customized with your logo or whatever, yeah, you can spend a couple bucks if you want.
Right.
But I think, as you said, it's quality stuff.
Right.
We make it to last a lifetime. It's not just like something that you're going to have in your trunk for a tailgate and just have a goof-off item. This is stuff that some people say to us, they have two sets. They have the set that they hang that is display, and then they have the set that they use because they love it so much that they want to keep one set pristine and gorgeous and the other one have a lot of fun using.
Yeah, makes great conversation pieces too.
Yeah, they have some cheap tools in the garage, you know, a cheap spatula, cheap set of tongs, which, maybe I use to sift through charcoal with, because they're crap, And so you get what you pay for, and yours are so well made. And just how many people, Jeff, every time you use yours with the baseball handle, what is that? And Jeff, he's not kidding. I've been to his house for numerous barbecues, and those are his tools of choice. So
absolutely.
We've told the story before about how they started. One of the other guys on our team, his dad took a broken grill tool and a cracked bat and put them together. You hold a baseball bat in your hand, you can't grab it wrong. No matter how you pick it up, it feels perfect in your hand. That's the genesis of the whole company. Everything from the silly hats and the cutting boards and everything started because this just seemed like a really nice, ergonomic, perfect idea. Why isn't anybody else doing it? We looked at it and said, yeah, we can do this. So we did.
The only thing I suggest, though, baseball, when you're in Little League or whatever, what do they tell you? Choke up on the bat, right? Don't choke up on the spatula handle. You will burn yourself. No choking up on the baseball bat handle.
Well, who chokes up anymore? Everyone's swinging for the fences. Everyone's looking for exit velo and launch angle. Nobody's bunting their way off the island with our tools.
So, Fred, we thank you for your time. Tell us, you have any social media? And obviously, go ahead, promote your website because it's just fantastic.
Sure. Yeah, we're all over the social medias. We're Twitter at BaseballBBQ. We're on Instagram and Facebook, but I have no idea what those things are because that's not what I do. I do the Twittering. The website is www.baseballbbq.com. You can check out all the tools, all the hats. You can read the story in our little scorebook blog that us old guys won our World Series.
We
are now the back-to-back 40-plus men's senior baseball league world champs.
Congratulations.
Nice trip out in Phoenix a couple weeks ago. And, there's all just kids jumping up and down on the mound after the game. That was a lot of fun. So it's good stuff. And, whether you're a Mets fan, a Phillies fan, or just a baseball fan, a Mississippi State fan, we can do some fun things for you. If you want to write "I love you, Dad" on the tools or "go the distance," we can do anything custom. We're having a blast. Get in touch with us. Jeff and Len can tell you they made suggestions, and now some of our products reflect their suggestions. Other people came up with the idea of the juice trough for our cutting board. One of our fellow ball players came up with the idea of the jersey board. You got something that sounds like fun. We'll do it. We're nimble enough to say, you know, all right, let's give it a try.
All right. And don't forget the, you know, holiday season's right around. Get your voters in early.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Basically, as anyone would know, you and Mike know that baseball and BBQ are the perfect combination. And baseballbbq.com. Go there, get your gifts, and get something for yourself at the same time.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, thank you very much, Brett. We really appreciate you coming on.
Ben, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. All right.
Thank you, Brett.
And thank you, Brett, for joining us. Too bad we couldn't have Mike on, his partner there. But Brett was a really great interview. Mike, if you're listening, we missed you.
Yeah, we definitely did. And guys, the Phillies had a great run. They had a great run. They had a better run than our Mets.
They certainly did.
It didn't matter. You know, Jeff, the Mets won 102 games, got knocked out in the first round. The Phillies won, what, 87?
Yeah.
And barely got into the playoffs and make it to the World Series. I don't even have to ask you which one you would have taken.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, Jeff, our 5-year anniversary is coming up.
Really?
Yeah. What I don't know what, you know, what the appropriate gift is for 5 years, but I'm going to tell you that a tool, a cutting board, or any of the tools from baseballbbq.com would make an appropriate gift no matter what year it is. It could be your 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's they are just great.
They are.
Anyone thinking about getting gifts, I said it before, I'll say it again. Also, you have the Pandemic Baseball Book Club if you're looking for gifts. Take a look at that site, the Pandemic Baseball Book Club, and see if you find something on there.
And we have a lot of the authors from the Pandemic Baseball Book Club.
Get a book.
Yeah. And if you have any comments that you want to share with us, you can give us a call. Len, what's the phone number?
You want me to give my number? Jeff, that's your job. Come on.
It's 516-855-8214.
That's it.
You can email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. You can leave a message on our Facebook page at it's Baseball and BBQ. We have a Twitter. At Baseball and BBQ.
Tweet.
Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue. Barbecue is all spelled out. Website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
And also, if you find that little birdie to be annoying, tell us about it, because that was too much tweets. Jeff, let me just hold on. Let me call up. All right. Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, hello, Baseball and Barbecue. Yeah, I'm all ticked off. Yeah, how come Shohei Ohtani didn't win the MVP and that Judge guy did? I want you guys to talk about that.
Sounded like an angry caller, Jeff.
Yep.
Do you have a comment?
No, I don't. I do want
no comment.
You, no comment. But I want to comment about Hinchcliffe Stadium. You know, it's coming back, and our next guest knows all about it.
Who's that?
That's Brian Lopinto. Hinchcliffe Stadium is located in Paterson, New Jersey. It is one of only two Negro League stadiums still standing. The other one is Rick Wood Field in Alabama. First opened in 1932, it was the home to the New York Black Yankees and the New York Cubans. But it was not just used for baseball. Home to many events such as college, pro, and high school football, motorcycle racing, boxing, entertainment, which includes concerts, circuses, and even rodeos. Closed in 1997 and years of neglect, it was feared that the stadium would be torn down. However, with years of effort from our guest, Hinchcliffe Stadium has a new life and will open again in the spring of 2023. We first spoke to him in September of 2020, and he is back to talk about the progress of Hinchcliffe Stadium. Welcome back to Baseball and BBQ, Brian Lopinto. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you, Jeff? How are you, Len? Doing okay?
Doing great. Now that you're here with us,
yeah,
missed you, Brian.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. This is my third visit here. So
yeah,
You know,
yeah, well, like, that's not enough.
Okay, well, you know, just like Saturday Night Live, you know, got to get to the Five Timers Club.
Brian, tell us, Hinchcliffe Stadium is going to reopen, I guess, in the spring. Yeah. How's it going? Tell us the progress since the last time we spoke to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the men and women that are working at the stadium, they're working very diligently. You know, the actual folks that are doing the rehabilitation work, they're there every day, Monday through Friday, and the work's coming along quite nicely.
Ryan, we had the honor of meeting you for the first time after speaking at the actual stadium when you were still unsure of what was going to happen to this place.
Right.
And we got there. The Parks Department had taken over at that point, but the stadium, total disarray, graffiti, broken glass everywhere, weeds. And I tell people, you took us inside, and I knew of the history of the stadium, having done a ton of research before, having spoken to you. And I say it's sort of like the Native American in that commercial for the pollution. For those who are old enough to remember, there was a commercial. For those not old enough to remember, there was a commercial with a Native American sitting atop a horse, and basically is you see him in the woods, comes to the edge, looks out the highway. There's tons of garbage and, you know, pollution all over the place, litter. And the Native American, a tear comes out of his eye. And I told you at the time, I felt as I'm standing there, I felt like a tear was going to come out of my eye. Mm-hmm. Like, what? I never, of course, saw this beautiful stadium when it was one of the most beautiful places.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what went on there, and it just was so sad. So, and I can only imagine you being from Patterson and knowing about it, what it must have been like. So what is the feeling that you had then and the feeling that you have now as the stadium is about to be reopened?
Well, I guess the feeling then when I gave you the little tour of the stadium was, you know, I kind of had been used to the neglect at that point. So, you know, after a while, you feel as though maybe it will never happen. But you always kind of keep that hope going. And yeah, it's taken way too long for it to materialize. But now, you know, I look at it and look, it's definitely a surreal experience. But at the same time, you know, this is what we had always hoped for, was that the stadium would have a second life, or a third life in this case.
Because in 1934, Hinchcliffe Stadium was described as the most beautiful park in the East.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, if you think about just the simple construct of the ballpark with its Art Deco quality, it really is, you know, just a very beautifully laid out ballpark. And I should mention, it was laid out by the Olmsted brothers. So there's a rich history there that connects back to Frederick Law Olmsted through his sons. So there's another piece of that history that's also very important to Hinchcliffe Stadium. But yeah, I mean, it's that Art Deco look that really kind of makes it very attractive. But of course, the most important part is really the play of the over 20 Hall of Famers that played at Hinchcliffe Stadium.
Yeah, and some of them include Oscar Charleston, Satchel Paige, Larry Doby, of course, Monty Irvin, and Cool Papa Bell.
Right.
All those great, great players played there. And yeah, it's great to see it's coming back to life. And if you want to see pictures of the construction progress, they do have a Twitter page, Hinchcliffe Stadium, at Hinchcliffe STAD. And you can see the progress photos. I see they post it every couple of days.
Yeah, I just want to, just one quick clarification, though, when it comes to Satchel Paige, he actually never pitched at Hinchcliffe Stadium during the period of significance. He was there in 1966,
oh, okay.
Which was kind of like almost the equivalent of an old timers day game. But some people do mention that he played there. I don't consider it that fact, but it was more just for clarity's sake, though.
And you know where I read that?
Where's that?
In a New York Post last Sunday, where,
yeah,
you know, we set this up a couple of weeks ago for you to come on the show. I had no idea this article was coming out just a couple of days ago.
Well, I can tell you neither did I.
And I loved all your quotes in it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, zero. Maybe they would have got the Satchel Paige quote correct.
Exactly. That's what it said. Satchel Paige played there. So yeah. That's where I got that information.
Technically, right? He played at something. He was in a game. Yeah, but there.
I mean, Babe Ruth was also there in attendance. I mean, does that count? You know, so, I mean, for those of us that really kind of focus on the baseball history, and if someone were to say the Satchel Paige played there, well, he didn't play there during the period of significance. So.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because you have so many other great Hall of Famers that played there. So Gibson, of course.
Now, Brian, it's unbelievable how involved you've been with this. And I've gotten the chance to hear you on other podcasts and hearing you speak about the stadium. It's a beautiful thing to hear you talk about it. But it's so funny how many people know you, because just today I was doing some research, and of course I want to talk about this, is that the New Jersey Jackals will be playing their home games at the stadium next year. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted the Jackals and I spoke to someone. As I'm talking to them, I said, "And do you know Brian LoPinto?" And he said to me, "Yes, I know Brian very well. As a matter of fact, I owe him an email."
Oh, probably Reed Keller. He's a great guy. He's the voice of the Jackals. And I got to tell you, he's got a great career in baseball because he's such an excellent broadcaster. Love to stay with the Jackals, but I'm sure we're going to see him someday in a very notable position.
Yeah.
So the New Jersey Jackals are an independent team that's mm-hmm. now going to be leasing at Angel Stadium. They've been in Jersey for 25 years.
Correct.
In Montclair, where Yogi Bear Stadium is. And now they're moving to Hinchcliffe Stadium. And there's some significance behind that. Could you explain that?
Well, I think there's a lot of significance because the New Jersey Jackals, their owner, Mr. Al Dorso, is originally from Patterson. So there's something very special to see and hear that someone like Mr. Dorso, who is from Patterson, now has that opportunity to bring a professional baseball club to the town that he was born and raised in. So it speaks volumes about his commitment, not only to Patterson and to the Jackals, but to baseball as a whole, because he also owns the Sussex County Miners, a very successful businessman in his own right. And certainly we're grateful for just that desire, to have that opportunity. I love Yogi Berra Stadium. I still do. Hate to see the Jackals go, but if they're going to go somewhere, I'm glad it's Hinchcliffe Stadium.
Yeah.
Did you ever, when we spoke, you showed us around, you showed us where home plate was at the original Hinchcliffe Stadium. I know one of your goals was to have that home plate place where it originally was. Do you know if that's going to be the case?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something I'm still trying to find out myself. I mean, just from a professional baseball standpoint, the most logical place is to put it where professional baseball was played. Back in 1963, unfortunately, the Patterson Public Schools took charge of the stadium and reconfigured the diamond. But that put left field at about 500 feet and right field just about maybe just under 200. Not really conducive for any level of baseball. But returning it to where the Negro Leagues played, it makes it very similar to the Polo Grounds. And the feeling really is, if it's good enough for over 20 Hall of Famers, if the Polo Grounds was good enough for Willie Mays and Monty Irvin, and of course Monty Irvin played at Hinchcliffe, then it's got to be good for the players of the Frontier League or at the high school level. So I'm hopeful that they'll make the right decision. But of course, the Frontier League would have to be acceptant of the dimensions as well. But logistically and logically, it makes sense to return it to the Negro Leagues diamond.
Yep. Do you know the dimensions of the stadium? Has that been made
public? Well, I would tell you what it was during the Negro Leagues days. You're talking, kind of equidistant down the line, about 260, give or take. And of course, a very deep center field. Definitely, I don't know that I have the numbers out, because there used to be a wall that was there during the Negro Leagues time. Now there isn't. But it's definitely a very deep center field, similar to the Polo Grounds.
Now, Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello is from Patterson, right?
That's correct. And Central High School.
So it would be very apropos to have someone do a who's on first routine at the stadium. And Jeff and I would, of course, volunteer, because we once did that.
Of course.
I mean, for a summer camp, a Cubs summer camp.
Yeah.
No, but there is a statue of him outside the stadium, isn't there?
Well, there's a statue of Lou Costello not too far from the stadium,
right?
In the downtown, which was actually put up in, I think, 1992. And they actually redid that Costello Park recently. So, and there's also a Larry Doby statue on the other side of town at Larry Doby Field. So yeah, there's definitely the nice baseball representation of the statuary in town.
So tell us about the whole project, not just the stadium. There's going to be a restaurant, there's going to be a museum, there's going to be housing. Tell us about the whole project and how it came together.
Well, I mean, the whole project, if you look at it, you know, some people say, well, it's such a big price tag for the stadium. And the fact remains that there are three new buildings being built as part of this project. So when you look at the overall project, the high price, a lot of that has to do with the new construction. And the way it came about, it was Patterson's turn for tax credits. So these are tax credits that are being made available. And of course, it's within the boundaries of the national park. So it's going to be the first sporting venue within the boundaries of a national park, at least when it becomes active again. So should certainly some exciting times in the area.
Is it going to be done on time, Brian? Because it has to be, apparently it has to be done by the end of 2023. And now it has to be done sooner because the Jackals have to get in there.
Right. So based on those tax credits, the legalities is that it has to be done by the end of 2023. But my understanding is that the plan had always been to have it done right. They were hoping initially this current fall. But again, there's always going to be some delays, materials and things of that nature. Now we're getting into the winter months. But remember, the Jackals, they're going to start playing in May. So I definitely foresee that the stadium will be ready by Jackals opening day, which is May 20th on a Saturday.
Did I read that the capacity is now a few seats? Did they reduce the capacity?
Sure. So the capacity will be about 7,500 seats, and it was 10,000, but there's a very good reason for that. There needs to be ADA compliance for the Americans with Disabilities Act. So what you're doing is you're taking away seats, but you are providing seats for, you know, those that need wheelchairs. So, mm-hmm. And then of course that would count as part of the attendance if that were to be, you know, a part of the count there. But you know, you do have to make certain accommodations, and certainly we've always welcomed that. You know, sure, it would have been nice to have a 10,000 seat facility, but you know, 7,500, it's a lot more manageable. Rarely do you get a sellout, you know, at any level of minor league baseball, unless it's maybe the championship game out in Las Vegas. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's still a very good number, you know, for Frontier League baseball and for concerts and for any other activities you might have.
Were you at the, when they put the shovel in the ground? I know Larry Doby Jr. was there. I believe Willie Randolph was there. I forget. Right. I read.
CeCe Sabathia was there. Yeah.
Were you there for that?
So I was there. I wasn't invited, but I made sure to crash the party. So, yeah. So luckily, I have a lot of great allies out there that are open enough to share with me when there might be these type of events. And yeah, I made sure to make my presence known for sure.
Brian, it seems sometimes whoever the powers that be are almost fighting against the volunteers who want to make it happen. You know, like you just said, you weren't invited. I mean,
right. Which is fine. I don't need to be invited.
Right. I understand. But have they been cooperative with your committee?
I would probably, the answer is no, actually not. Since you asked me a direct question, I have to give a direct answer. But, at the end of the day, you know, our feeling is that politicians come and go, and advocates for historic sites, they're here for the long term. And I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to make an investment and become a New Jersey Jackals season ticket holder because I feel it's the right thing to do. It's something that I've always wanted to be a part of as far as having a professional team at Hinchcliffe Stadium. And this will be the first time there's professional baseball at Hinchcliffe Stadium since 1950. So it's a pretty seminal moment, and looking forward to opening day.
Could you tell us what's going to be in the museum? Building over there?
I wish I could tell you. Another thing in which I have been, you know, kind of banned from, when I think it's kind of hilarious, quite frankly. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's supposed to be interpretive space there. My understanding of it, there has been some stalls on that. What it will look like at this juncture, I have no idea. I know that when the National Park Service had accepted Hinchcliffe Stadium within the boundaries, thanks to Congressman Pascrell, who made it an act of Congress that they accept it. The verbiage was that the National Park Service, they were going to be responsible for interpretation. So it's a little unclear to me. I don't think they're going to be running that interpretive space if it ever gets launched and off the ground. But at the end of the day, we'll see. I have no idea what that's going to look like at this juncture.
Yeah, the National Park Service is actually having a building built for them there.
Well, not necessarily at the stadium. If the Park Service has something on their own, it'll be on the other side of the falls.
Okay.
Because it's a unique set of circumstances in which Hinchcliffe Stadium is owned by the Patterson Public Schools. And there's a building being built there where there's going to be, whether you want to call it restaurant space or event space, on the second floor. And this idea, this supposed interpretive space. So, you know, don't know where that's going to be, but at the end of the day, that doesn't necessarily mean it's part of the Park Service's property. It is just within the boundary of the park. So it is in the boundary, but it's not paid for by the Park Service.
Well, I recommend that anybody that goes to the stadium, let's say to watch a Jackals game, get there early, because while we were waiting for you to arrive, we walked around. And it's incredible with the falls, the view. It's really amazing with the stadium there, and you know, with the Park Service, they were giving tours. I mean, I think it's going to be a really great experience.
Absolutely. I mean, remember, the National Park Service, they've been in town since about 2009, and it's been, you know, again, the transfers of properties from the city to the Park Service. The best thing that's happened to the city of Patterson in the last 60 years is the National Park Service coming into town. And at this juncture, about maybe a little more than 300,000 people visit the Great Falls on a yearly basis. And each year that number climbs. So there's more and more visitors. People love the National Park Service. The National Park Service brand is rather big and important. So to think that you could watch a ball game in a national park, there's something very special about that. So yeah, to your point, definitely get down there early. There's a great restaurant called E&V. If you like really good Italian food, there's a Mexico bar and grill with some great Mexican food nearby. You know, just make a day of it, because when you go to the national park, you tend to do that. And now you have something to do. And that's Hinchcliffe Stadium.
Exactly. Now, Brian, it's not just baseball is going to be at Hinchcliffe Stadium, right? It's going to be a venue for concerts and other events, right?
Well, that's the hope. I mean, they really should make great use of the stadium. It needs to generate revenue, because that revenue then needs to go back into the upkeep of the facility. So ideally, sure, just like any other stadium, you would probably have concerts. I know that there's interest in having professional soccer there, which would be great. You know, certainly I believe that you should not turn your back on the winter months. As we get into colder weather, why not put in, you know, a temporary ice skating rink where, you know, families can come, you know, and rent skates and just kind of have a nice day out, maybe have some, you know, adult beverages during the winter that people like, kind of let, you know, make it very welcoming and inviting. I think, you know, there's 365 days in a year. There's no reason why that stadium can't be at least, you know, somewhat packed with programming, because again, it's the revenue generating events that will allow you to keep the stadium going for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
I try to look beyond the groundbreaking, beyond the ribbon cutting. Those events are inconsequential. They have no value. It's what happens after the ribbon cutting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're going to get the stadium will be filled up, you know, first couple of Jackals game, and then we'll see how it goes. Yeah, exactly. You need other events in there. Will the Patterson schools be using it?
Absolutely. Well, they will be. You know, unfortunately, the Patterson Public Schools do own Hinchcliffe Stadium. They've owned it since 1963 to the present day. Frankly, they should be really focused on one thing, educating students. You know, I think the city should own the stadium, because they have, you know, they touch upon historic preservation, economic development, community development. But regardless, they did not incorporate the abandoned properties ordinance. But regardless, even if the city owned it, the school kids should be able to play there. I'm hopeful that it's going to be used for both Eastside and Kennedy baseball, Eastside and Kennedy football, and Eastside and Kennedy soccer. There will be a track there. There should not be a track, because the track does not meet the specifications and the requirements for high school competition. So, but yeah, it's still going to be hopefully, you know, pretty well used by everybody.
Yeah, you just mentioned track. I do see the picture. They're putting in the track and field events, long jump and the pole vault in there.
Yeah, but I don't think they can't even do it there because the state already said that they will not sanction any races there. They would have had to have extended the stadium beyond over the cliff, if you will, and cantilever it in order to make it appropriate for athletic competition. So I don't know who's going to use the track because, you know, even if you use it for practice, track is a very muscle memory sport and your body really needs to know the turns. So that might actually be a hindrance, but who knows? Maybe it'll be for the senior housing people.
Maybe. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense putting it in if they can't.
I've been trying to say that for the longest time, but you know, Patterson loves to fall on deaf ears.
That would have made sense. There is going to be a senior housing project, so that would make sense. Instead of having to walk in a shopping mall, you could just walk around the track.
I'm not certain that they did it for that reason, you know. And I don't see it being.
No, I'm sure they didn't.
I don't see them using the pole vault.
Hey, you never know.
Exactly.
You know, in fact, you want to have the seniors that are into the skydiving and all that kind of stuff living next door because there are lighting fixtures right outside their bedroom. So
now, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
You said the school is going to be using it for baseball, football, and whatnot.
And soccer, yeah.
Yeah. You would hope that the coaches there would impart some of the history of that stadium for those kids to know it.
Yeah, and especially those that are coaching baseball. And I think, you know, I know I had spoken to one of the coaches, and they were all in. They were at the Larry Doby Day event on July 5th, which actually I was invited to, believe it or not. But I was invited by Larry Doby Jr. and Benji Wimberly. And I met the Eastside High School baseball coach, and such a great guy, really someone that really understood the importance of not only Hinchcliffe Stadium, but specifically Larry Doby because of that connection. And he shares that with the ball players. So I'm sure the other, you know, coaches will too, because it's definitely a very important teaching moment. Because what you're going to share with the kids is now you're playing on the same field as these Hall of Famers. And I think that's something that can serve as inspiration. So to going back to your earlier question, that's a large part also why it's important to return the Negro Leagues diamond to its same configuration. Because now you're going to share with the kids, you're standing in the same place that Larry Doby did. And that could really do something for a kid.
Yeah.
It's very inspirational. But it's also, again, conducive for a better baseball dimensions.
I actually tried to get Jackal tickets today.
Oh.
And yeah, I figured, you know, why not? I want to be at Hinchcliffe at a game.
Good.
But they're not for sale yet.
Yep. You know, they still have to work through a lot of things. You know, it's the off season, right? Frontier League. They just recently announced the schedule not too long ago. So, you know, they do a great job over there. And, you know, I can't wait for it to see what some of their promotions are going to be at Hinchcliffe Stadium. And yeah, you don't worry. Well, we're going to get you there and I'll go with you.
Good. I was thinking the seating plan. I wonder if that's probably not even done yet.
Yeah, I think they have to work through all that, right? Because you have to think about also the other things, right? They need to have the configuration for their press box, right? Everything all the behind the scenes things that people don't realize that go on at a baseball game, they have to look at that stuff first. And then I'm sure they're going to find a great plan. And there really isn't going to be a bad view in that house. So,
Brian, I don't want to be Debbie Downer,
okay,
whatever. But do you think it will be ready for the Jackals to open their season in May?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
I really do. I would tell you if I didn't feel otherwise. But you know, okay. I've made a number of visits to the stadium, take a look at how things are going, and things are going rather well, you know.
Okay, good.
I think the one thing that would stand in the way would be, what does winter look like? And that's with any other project. So remember, like what the Jackals are doing, very smart. And this is what every team at every level of professional sports have done, is that they start the season on the road, because you always want to give it some extra time and even to just kind of have it go through some, you know, some practices and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, will it be ready by May 20th? I would say almost absolutely. You never can be 100% sure, but I'm 99.9% sure.
Yeah, I mean, last year when they opened the UBS Arena here on Long Island, the Islanders had to spend 2 months on the roof before getting a home game.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, but you do that because you never know what can go wrong with a major construction. I was at the first game at UBS, and great facility. You know, I had to go there for the first game because I got to be a part of history.
Sure, sure. I'm looking at the Frontier League website now. I didn't realize there's 16 teams in this league.
Yeah.
And which is more than the Atlantic League. And, Len and I are more familiar with the Atlantic League being here in Long Island and Staten Island. But, wow, they're really, I mean, it's concentrated, I would think, just in the Northeast. But, no, it goes out to even as far as Illinois.
Yeah, they have some teams in the Chicagoland area. So
And Canada.
Yeah. And yeah, sure. And a lot of those Canadian teams were kind of holdovers from the old Can-Am League. Mm-hmm. But I think that really also shows, you know, how valuable the Frontier League is. It's a really top flight partner ball league, if you will, because they are a partner league with Major League Baseball, not affiliated, a little different for those that are not aware. Mm-hmm. But still, the Frontier League is a very well-respected league. And the fact that they're going to be in Hinchcliffe and they've welcomed it with open arms, I think it's really exciting.
How would you think the level of play is? Double A, Triple A?
Yeah, it depends. I've gone to some games last year, and on the video board, you know, they would say if the guy had Triple A experience. Some guys had a cup of coffee with the major league at the major league level. Mm-hmm. Some single A. So you do have a variety of skill sets at this level, but certainly good quality ball. And I know that the Jackals are going to try to put a great team on the field.
Yeah, so they're not a minor league team for any of the major league teams. They're just
correct, right?
But they are associated with Major League Baseball.
Yes, exactly. They're a partner league, just as the Atlantic League is.
Right. I think what they do is, we're going to experiment some stuff here. We'll try it in the Frontier League, see how exactly. It goes there. And
we're going to make the bases 5 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they do things like that, the pitch clock. But I think they also test out other technologies, various cameras and different ways of tracking, player productivity. So I think it's great because Major League Baseball will then help these leagues, and then these leagues could kind of be around for some time. And there's also a need for the players to kind of have a place where they could try to get back to affiliated ball. So you never know who you might see coming through Patterson someday.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You must be overjoyed that this is happening. I mean, we've known you a couple of years, and I know this has been a passion of yours for longer than that.
Yes.
So when did you first get involved with trying to resurrect the Hinchcliffe Stadium? Could you remind us of that?
Yes. Yeah, so it goes back some time ago. It started in 1997. And that's when I read an article. Yeah. Well, that's when the article came out that they were going to, quote unquote, condemn the stadium, meaning they weren't going to use it anymore. And when I read condemned, the next word that came to mind was demolition.
Yeah.
So then I contacted the Baseball Hall of Fame, and they wrote back, and they said that Hinchcliffe Stadium was represented in their library's archives. That's all I needed to do, do my own independent research, understand and speak, knowledgeably and articulately about why this place is important, and then form the Friends of Hinchcliffe Stadium with two colleagues of mine, Dr. Flavia Lai and Chris Koch. And that was in 2002. We formed formally, but that was as early as it started. It was 97, and then 2002, and then here we are.
And I would think that a friend of the show, Bob Kendrick, is really behind this project.
Absolutely. In fact, Bob and I, we were on with New Jersey City University. Goodness, it was actually probably a year and a half ago. In fact, it was a sad day. It was a day that the gentleman who played Jackie Robinson, Chadwick Boseman, he passed away that same day we did the show. So I remember that sadly and vividly. But yeah, we were on together. And he had always been a big supporter of Hinchcliffe Stadium and certainly Larry Doby. In fact, CBS recently did a piece on Larry Doby and went out to the Kansas City Museum to talk to Mr. Kendrick. So, yeah, he's definitely very supportive of anything that's going on with Hinchcliffe Stadium and, of course, Negro Leagues as a whole.
Yeah, he's been out to the stadium, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep. He was there. In fact, that was something I was invited to, was when it became a National Historic Landmark. And he and I both spoke that day. And thankfully, he was able to come out from Kansas City. It was a very cold day, but he was definitely full of smiles for sure.
Brian, you get called a lot.
Called a lot of things a lot, actually. Yeah. I mean, depends, it depends on what people want. But yeah. People have reached out to me for a number of different reasons in regard to the stadium, whether it's interviews or whether it's information or just wanting to chat or wanting to be on a on a podcast.
And you never get tired of talking about it, right?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a great history, you know, and to me, I think speaking about Hinchcliffe Stadium is really a way of speaking about Larry Doby, because to me, he's the hero that personifies Hinchcliffe Stadium. And that's on one side of the Great Falls, right? And then the other side, you have Alexander Hamilton, the other hero that people can talk about. So there's a lot of great history right there in that quadrant of the Great Falls and Hinchcliffe Stadium. So, you know, it's a fun subject matter to talk about, because it's baseball, really, at the end of the day, because that's what marked the time. At the end of the day, too, there's other things like auto racing, which is important to talk about, the football history, you know, the entertainment events. Duke Ellington performed one of the last concerts of his life there. So it's a great history that still people don't really know enough about, but hopefully people will want to learn about it.
You know, I know the show that they could do at the at Hinchcliffe. Mm-hmm. They could do a touring show of Hamilton.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because I actually felt that that should be the case. In fact, on our Friends of Hinchcliffe Stadium Facebook page, we actually tagged Lin-Manuel with that, because the first ever event at Hinchcliffe Stadium wasn't even a sporting event. It was a theatrical performance on the life of George Washington, because George Washington and Alexander Hamilton were on the other side, you know, the river. And that's how they discovered, you know, this idea of hydroelectric power for America's first planned industrialized city. Of course, George Washington stayed nearby at the Dye Mansion. So there's a rich history to George Washington there. And I thought, well, if you do a theatrical performance for George, why not Hamilton? But I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon, but that would be great. And I think it's a great idea.
I don't think you're going to have auto racing there again, are you?
You know, I think the only way you can have auto racing or motorcycle racing, first off, remember they were midget cars. So they're not what we think of today in the modern day. They're not even Formula One. I mean, Formula One's like a lot longer of a car. I think the only way you do that is if you put, you know, kind of like the flooring that you might have for a concert, and then on top of that, put another flooring. But that's very costly. Now, if a promoter wants to do that and they want to spend the money, you know, hopefully they can do that. But it's definitely going to be quite a bit of cost. Mm-hmm. But it could also be something that could be a revenue generator. So,
sure.
You know, hey, you know, if Tony Stewart wants to come out and do something, that'd be great.
Yeah, I can see concerts going there.
Yeah.
I mean, we have an outdoor concert venue near here in Jones Beach. I mean, I think it's like 10,000 seats or something. Yeah. But, you know, they have the circuit. You have the one in Jersey down by the Garden State Parkway. And, you know, stop by Hinchcliffe Stadium and do a concert there. So that'd be revenue generating as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think musical events, you know, it's something that you could easily do at almost any venue. And there's no reason why Hinchcliffe Stadium could not host a concert, you know, easily. And you would increase the capacity, right? Because the seating bowl,
right,
if you will, is 7,500. But you would put people on the field, and that'll increase it. Or even music festivals, where it's like a 3-day event.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the opportunities are almost endless. I think you just have to be creative and be able to want to actually get these things done.
Brian, you are a true historian on the area, the stadium. Is there anything that that you found in your research since the last time we spoke that is new and you found interesting?
Well, I think one of the it's more about like the pre-stadium era. For example, there was talk about Hinchcliffe, or and I shouldn't say Hinchcliffe, a stadium being built in Patterson. And in my research, there was a lot of like lamenting the fact that other cities similar size to Patterson or a little bigger had these rather big stadiums. And why wasn't Patterson having a stadium? And I think they were talking about a stadium as early as 1919. And it took till 1932. So the one thing I learned is like, well, I guess there's always been a history of things taking way too long in Patterson. But one of the original ideas for a stadium was about a 20,000 seat facility. And it was actually scaled back to a little bit less, because by the time the stadium opened, you're talking about the stock market crash had occurred. So I think they scaled it back for that reason. It was going to be at a different location as well. But someone, I believe, working for the city of Patterson brought it to Mayor Hinchcliffe's attention why not this area by the falls? And I think that that is the person that really kind of got the credit for bringing it to the mayor's attention. And then the rest, as they say, is history. So, and then they started building the field in 1930, which I knew that prior to seeing you guys, but kind of interesting that they were talking about a 20,000 seat facility. And it would have, like I said, it would have been a different location. If it's at a different location, it's not at the falls. If it's not at the falls, it's not going to be in a national park. So while it would have been great to have a 20,000 seat facility, it would have been maybe a lot sooner, and then maybe would have been gone much sooner. Like Roosevelt Stadium. Unfortunately not with us anymore.
Right. And one last question from me before we let you go.
Sure.
Educate our listeners of who Hinchcliffe was. I mean, the stadium named after him. Sure. So who was Hinchcliffe?
So it's interesting. So you got to look at Hinchcliffe as a family name. So the mayor at the time, as I mentioned earlier, his name is John V. Hinchcliffe. So he was very much a proponent of having a stadium built in Patterson. And he worked through that, you know, with, I guess, the alderman at the time. But at the end of the day, when it was named for him, it was others that made that suggestion. And it was the mayor at that time who said that it wasn't for him, but it was to honor his uncle, also named John Hinchcliffe, who was mayor in Patterson during the Great Fire and the Great Floods, 1902, 1903, in that time period. I think there's a bit of humility there by this current, by that mayor at that time. And so, you know, it's really about the family name. Of course, the Hinchcliffe family, they were actually very big in the beer business. The Hinchcliffe Brewery was a very big, wealthy establishment in town. So there's also, you know, the family name of the Hinchcliffe Brewery. That's a part of that. So it does kind of touch upon at least two or three different possibilities. But
And I have one more. And sure. And I hope this is not the case, but any chance they're going to like kind of sell the rights to naming the stadium and name it like something at Hinchcliffe Stadium, or like they did here at Jones Beach? It was I don't know, Kenneth Cole at Jones Beach Reno or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. I mean, obviously, you know, when you talk about a historic facility like this, revenue, as I mentioned earlier, is very important. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, it could be something along those lines, but I have not heard one way or the other. I mean, it could be also a situation where it's like Hinchcliffe Stadium presented by, you know, fill in the blank.
Right.
Which I think might be a little more palatable, right? As opposed to such and such field at Hinchcliffe Stadium, which might not kind of roll off the tongue too well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might rename it Larry Doby Field at Hinchcliffe Stadium, which is possible, but that would be really kind of dedicating the field name.
Right.
So we'll see. But I mean, if they get a corporate sponsor, it's I mean, technically, right, Wrigley Field was a corporate sponsor.
Sure.
I'm sure, you know, the Wrigley brand is not paying any money for that these days because they don't really have to. But that was kind of like your original, you know, product placement.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Brian, the reason Jeff is asking, and we should really not reveal this, but is we were thinking that maybe we would, you know, it would be baseball and BBQ at Hinchcliffe or Hinchcliffe. Yeah. You know, we wanted to pony up the shekels and do the you know, the sponsorship.
So, what's the price? What's the offer?
We're very low shekels, that's for sure.
We're in negotiations.
Okay. Well, let me know how that works for you.
You know,
maybe they'll let you have a flagpole. You wave a baseball and barbecue flagpole.
The article in the Post said something interesting that I didn't realize. Says organized baseball in Patterson dates back as far as 1855. Multiple semi-pro and minor league teams called the city home, including the Patterson Silk Weavers, which featured Honus Wagner in 1896 to 97.
Correct. Yeah. So that ball club was an interesting ball club. They didn't technically play in Patterson. They played in what is Clifton, actually. But Clifton was not incorporated until 1917. So what they were Patterson by name, but didn't play in Patterson, which is fine. It's kind of what you see in sports every day, like with the pro teams here in New York area. So, 1896, 1897, Honus Wagner's on that team. the manager of that team, meaning like not only the field manager, but I think he was also the general manager. He was the gentleman who pretty much turned Babe Ruth from a pitcher to an outfielder, and that's Ed Barrow. He's in baseball's Hall of Fame, and he's a big-time Yankee executive after his time in Patterson with the Silkweavers. But in 1896, Patterson won the Atlantic League Championship, and they won the Sobey Cup. And in fact, the Sobey Cup and Wagner's Patterson uniform is at baseball's Hall of Fame.
And Brian, we have to include some barbecue talk in this. So Okay. Every region of the country is known for their different styles of barbecue. Mm-hmm. So what would you say Patterson, as I say this tongue in cheek, mm-hmm. what would you say, what style of barbecue is Patterson known for?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, I would say, you know, you could kind of look at what's done like in the Latino community. You know, some really good barbecues being done, you know, with their special spices and seasonings. So I think you have a lot of that, you know, opportunities going on. You have some of your traditional barbecue that you would have, you know, anywhere like in the New York metropolitan area. But, you know, Patterson's is a great place for food without a doubt. So not only barbecue, but there's some great Italian food and Mexican food. But yeah, for barbecue, you know, there's definitely some places for sure.
No, maybe we'll put a concession stand in Hinchcliffe Stadium.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, you know, Jeff, Ryan is unfazed. You can ask him any freaking question, and he is going to give you. I mean, I'm asking him Patterson, what the region of the country Patterson barbecue, and yes. He's straight faced, just answers the question as well as anyone could answer it. Brian, you are unbelievable.
I mean, I wasn't sure if you're going to ask a barbecue question. The last two times I got zero. So I'm like, I'm trying to prepare myself a little bit for it. You know, I even looked up places that might be available. I mean, you know, one place I would go to is in Nutley, but that's not in Patterson. But
oh, give us the name.
It's Jim Dandy's.
Jim Dandy's. Okay.
Jim Dandy's is definitely a great barbecue place in the area.
Nice. When you go to Jim Dandy's, what do you like to eat?
Their ribs are really good. Mm-hmm. Their pulled chicken is really good as well. You know, they've got a great variety, though.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
we'll have to try there.
We'll go.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go to a Jackals game, and we'll go to a barbecue.
Yeah, you know, I'll do it.
I know you will.
So I lied before. So one last thing before we go.
Fine.
You know, the New York Jets and the New York Giants play in New Jersey. Back in when Hinchcliffe Stadium opened in 1932, it hosted the New York Black Yankees, the New York Cubans. Mm-hmm. Why were they allowed to keep those names? I mean, if they're playing Patterson is not close to New York. I mean, it's not far, but it's not that close.
Yeah, it's not like 15 miles or so, 15, 18 miles, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, New York is New York. I mean, you know, we live in the New York metropolitan area. You know, I think for many of us here, like, you know, everybody loves New York. We do out here, at least a lot of us do. It's just, you know, a lot of it has to do with branding, you know, and, you know, in fact, the New York Black Yankees and the New York Cubans did play in New York City, you know, and when it comes to like a Negro League ball club, you know, you're not going to really change your name to anything like that. I mean, of course, the Newark Eagles were the Newark Eagles, right? They weren't the New Jersey Eagles.
Right.
So, you know, I think it depends on your locale and kind of what works for you. But back then they weren't even thinking about marketing, right? They didn't have like a whole lot you can purchase,
right.
I think, when you would go to a Negro League's game. So that's kind of another interesting thing about just how times have changed about like the merchandising and the marketing of ball clubs.
Yep. Well, we are so happy that Hinchcliffe Stadium is coming back to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll be hosting baseball and other events. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Please, before we go, tell us any websites we should check out, what they people should learn more about Hinchcliffe Stadium.
Yeah, sure. If you would like to learn more about Hinchcliffe Stadium, very easy. Go to hinchcliffestadium.com. And there's just a great history there, not only about baseball, but about the football. We have a little area, this date in history. So, you know, as we get into the winter months, we're not going to have that many Hinchcliffe Stadium-based events, but we'll find some information that kind of touches on Hinchcliffe Stadium, maybe through the Negro Leagues and maybe even some like off-season signings by the ball club. So, yeah, it's just a fun website for information, and our contact information is there, too, if you'd want to say hello.
Excellent. You know, Brian, We know, obviously, it takes a village, and it wasn't just you, but you know what? congratulations on a job well done.
I appreciate that.
We think you're awesome. And
yeah, that's very kind of you.
You now, did,
Brian. You said it takes a village. Now, does that make me the village idiot? I am a glutton for punishment, you know.
Yes. Well, you did it.
Larry Doby did it, because without his legacy, yes. I don't get to do it.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so nice that a piece of history is being restored. It's going to be a beautiful stadium. Jeff and I cannot wait to get out there and just enjoy it now rebuilt, you know, revamped, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be an amazing experience.
Well, you know, you got to talk to Reed and get yourself a live podcast for that day.
Yes.
There you go. Live from Hinchliffe Stadium.
Live from Hinchliffe Stadium.
That's a nice ring. Barbecue eating contest. I mean, you know, get Jack the Jackal involved. It'll be great.
Is that the mascot of the Jackals?
Yeah, Jack's great.
Jack the Jackal?
Jack the Jackal.
Jack the Jackal.
Jack the Jackal. He's the best.
All right.
Hands down.
Thank you, Brian, for being with us. This was a great spot.
Great. Let's do this again and love to see you over at the ballpark.
Okay. Thank you,
Brian.
Well, thank you, Brian. He knows everything about Hinchcliffe Stadium.
And there's so much to know. The history of that place is unbelievable. So, yeah, Brian, we thank you. We look forward to the next time you come back with us. And I want to tell everybody that we are brought to you by Bet Online, where the game starts. But, Jeff, you know what that means when I say that.
Yep.
We're not starting.
No.
We're ending. And we're going to end with our song called Baseball Always Brings You Home, by the poet Shel Kurkovsky, the musician Dave Dresser. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll be back for episode number 162.
See ya.